Hello and welcome to Instant Transmission, a podcast where we discuss everything Dragon Ball and why plot armor is the best healthcare plan. Our heroes entered the World Martial Arts Tournament only to find out some evil wizard Bugman has entered his minions as well, hell-bent on using its energy to unleash the terrible monster Boo upon the universe. To combat this evil, our heroes decide to engage in senseless fighting, hell-bent on letting this terrible monster be unleashed upon the universe. Lower your power level and sneak your way with me as we creep our way into the first installment of the Majin Buu saga. I'm your host, Dayton, and once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Todd.
Hi!
Tonight, we'll be covering Kai's final chapter, episodes 123 through 131, or however the hell they want to decide. After battling through waves of evil wizard monsters, also known as Babidi's minions, Vegeta has found himself under the control of Babidi's evil control spell and has engaged Goku in mortal combat. While the two Saiyans settle their grudge match, Gohan and the Supreme Kai have tracked down Babidi, Deborah, and the capsule containing the evil monster Majin Buu in hopes of defeating them before they can set the monster free. And with all of that covered, was there anything you wanted to add before we got things started, Todd?
No, I think we can start this one right away.
All right. Well, this one begins with episode 123. The seal is released. Gohan's Kamehameha of Resistance. I need a comment on the title of this episode in a little bit. I just realized that. But this episode begins with Goten needing to pee. Also, Trunks decides to pee with him. Then they start having a pee off, and then they get chased by a monster and then get back on their way.
We're going to talk about some of this stuff where, like, this whole first 60 seconds, like, I know Dragon Ball is a gag show or manga or whatever, and there's lots of potty humor, and I'm totally okay with that. But did we really need to keep this in here for the abridged version?
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to cut out, you know, all the content that's considered filler or not necessary to the plot. This isn't really a character building moment. I mean, yeah, sure, it's a gag, but I don't know. It's a pee gag. Maybe someone over there thinks pee jokes is really funny. Who knows?
I don't know. But yeah, let's keep moving. We basically move forward to the fight between Goku and Vegeta. And this part of it for me, I think this part's pretty cool. We get to see Goku kind of like slice one of Vegeta's ki blasts in half with his hand. They kind of go back and forth, Vegeta delivering like a heavy blow to Goku's stomach and then almost full on like pile driving him into the ground. And it's a fun exchange. We kind of cut over to, it's kind of cutting between these guys and Goten and Trunks here as we get this combat underway.
Yeah. And there's actually quite a bit of this. There's kind of multiple, I guess, plot lines happening at the same time throughout this kind of part of the Buu saga. So there's multiple instances where we're cutting back and forth. What I've got here is that there's a moment, though, where Goku and Vegeta actually pause to catch their breath. And we see Goku actually giving Vegeta a compliment on his strength and mentioning that he's even able to match Goku after all of his training in Otherworld. And to Goku, and really my shock as well, Vegeta actually tells Goku that it's still not enough and that Goku's innate talent is still too much for the Saiyan Prince. And this is why Vegeta used Babidi as a way of leveling the playing field.
Yeah, the implication here, I mean, we kind of find out confirmation that Vegeta did allow Babidi to take control of him. Vegeta basically saying, like, when I saw you fighting Babidi's henchmen and I saw you give that flash of, I mean, it's the flash of Super Saiyan 2, right? That's what kind of set Vegeta off. Like, he knew that he couldn't bridge that gap between the two of them. But with Babidi's magic, that gap was going to disappear.
Yeah, and there's also another angle that Vegeta reveals, and that's that Vegeta, he wanted to go back to the heartless warrior he once was, the perfect Saiyan fighter that he used to be. And Babidi was the only way for him to get rid of his earthly attachments and go back to that person he once was.
Yeah, this is a big moment, big in Vegeta's kind of story arc here, the part that I really like about the Buu saga. And I don't know if you had a chance to watch it, Dayton. I sent you a clip of the original Funimation dub version of this. I'll be honest. I like the delivery better in Kai, but I like some of the dialogue better in the original Funimation dub, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, a lot of the time I more or less feel the same way, but it feels like in the Funimation dub, they have a lot more, I guess, time that they're trying to fill with dialogue. So they'll take the time to kind of articulate things in greater detail. Whereas Kai's kind of using, I guess, all-encompassing words to try and like leap over a more nuanced response.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. It feels like in the original Funimation dub that we kind of got more of Vegeta's feelings about... I think he specifically expresses that he became soft. Like, he even thought that the Earth would be a nice place to live, and that he, you know, he let himself get comfortable with a family. I don't think we get that dialogue here the same way in Kai. And I was a little bit bummed that we didn't get all of those specific details. But yeah, I mean, to your point, they're trying to condense it down, so we kind of miss out on things as a result.
Yeah, I mean, he does mention that he started a family and started settling into Earth, but in the original version, he goes into more detail, kind of like what you were saying. I don't mind it, though. I don't necessarily always need them to fill me in on every detail. Sometimes them not telling me everything, just alluding to their actual emotion, is enough for me to kind of bridge that gap. And I think it's satisfactory here. I don't feel like I really lost a lot between the original and the Kai version. So I would say they did at least an adequate job.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give them adequate. It's not bad.
We do flip away from here for a moment to have a scene of Mr. Satan, who makes an announcement that he'll keep everybody safe as long as he gets the prize money real quick and in a jiffy. And that gives way to Chance of Satan Rocks, which I thought was interesting.
There's no doubt in my mind that you had the same thought that I had of just thinking about Dragon Ball Z Abridged of Hail Satan! Hail Satan!
I mean, there are moments in this, in Kai, where I can't tell if I'm watching Abridged or if I'm watching the actual original release or whatever. It's pretty funny, though. I had to have a good laugh. It's not really important, but it's a good chuckle moment for me.
Yeah, it kind of tickled my funny bone there, too. But we kind of shift over from that back to the situation with Babidi trying to resurrect Majin Buu, and Boo's bubble or Boo's energy is filled up. He's fully fueled from the fight between Goku and Vegeta. And this has the Supreme Kai and Gohan fully on edge.
I actually love the Supreme Kai's reaction to this. Just the sheer terror that crosses his face, the way he stumbles back in complete terror. And he even starts screaming at Gohan that they have to leave. They have to flee. There's no possible way for them to win this fight. And I love this reaction, because you got to remember that the Supreme Kai and Buu are kind of millennia old enemies. And this is an ancient evil that he was hoping that would never be re-released.
Yeah, I like this here as well, because you definitely get this vibe that Supreme Kai is terrified of this situation. But I mean, our Z fighters are no stranger to dangerous situations. And Gohan's like, I'm not leaving. We have to try something. And so with a scream powering up, Gohan charges up a Kamehameha and blasts the ball. But I think you wanted to say something about the Kamehameha title we have here.
Yeah. Okay, I might be wrong here, but I don't remember him ever saying Kamehameha, and I also don't remember that blast looking like one either. So I'm very confused about, is it a Kamehameha wave, or is it a regular Ki blast? What happened here?
It's, man, I have so many... there are so many situations that are confusing about that sort of thing. It's just like the Kamehameha that Goku does in the water that he shoots up at Frieza. They're like two blue balls that he sends upward. It's very wildly different from a normal Kamehameha, but Gohan does the motion. He pulls his hands back and shoots them forward in the same way as the Kamehameha, but the energy, the ki blast itself is yellow. And yeah, he does not say the name of the attack. So it's confusing. I don't know.
Also, just the animation quality in the attack is bad. Like, it's a bad looking, because it's supposed to be this kind of desperation, you know, throw caution to the wind. We're blasting this thing off the face of the planet. And it's a really mediocre, even subpar looking animated attack. Like, it just doesn't even look good. I don't know what was happening here, who was in charge of animating the scene, but honestly, it's bad.
I don't disagree with you. I will say, especially, I have to point this out because I've been shitting on the music for Kai left and right. I like the music that they chose for this scene. It's very heroic. I think it's one of the tracks from Super. But it gives you this like feeling of like, oh, you know, Gohan's about to do something awesome. And he delivers multiple ki blasts to the ball here. But yeah, as far as visuals, it's nothing to write home about.
Yeah, well, I mean, to the surprise of nobody, Gohan blasts this ball. And then, you know, it opens up and this cloud of smoke comes out and everyone's like, oh, no, he actually baked Boo inside, or he was in there for too long. And then suddenly it's revealed that the smoke was Boo the whole time and he starts taking form. And we finally get our first view of the pudgy pink bubblegum looking mofo called Majin Boo, who is not at all what you would expect him to look like.
Yeah. And we're almost glossing over this double twist, I guess. I think it's really interesting that Akira Toriyama, per the story, decided to be like, oh, you know, Gohan must have killed Boo, or Boo, there was some sort of flaw in him getting resurrected. And so you get Supreme Kai being super elated that, oh, you know, something happened, Boo's not going to be resurrected now. And Babidi's super upset. But then that flips on its head, like you said, and we get the reveal of Majin Buu in his hefty bubblegum form.
Yeah, it's big old Buu with his pink body, big old belly. He's got all the little holes across his body, his weird vest and baggy pants. It's the whole thing.
I think that mostly wraps up the episode, but I want to talk about Boo as we get more into his content here.
All right. Well, let's dive into episode 124, Straight Away Into Despair, The Terror of Majin Boo. And this episode continues the grudge match between Goku and Vegeta. And it kind of makes me laugh, but it's also kind of cool as hell that they start off with their hands locked as they just ferociously headbutt into each other because, I don't know, why not? Like, if they're going to compete, they're going to compete at every level, right? And then they eventually break apart. Vegeta hops into the air, launching a sidekick at Goku's head, who raises his arm, deflecting the blow, throwing a punch of his own that Vegeta dips underneath. And then we see Vegeta land on his hands, pushing up into a kick that Goku narrowly dodges, and then uses his own backwards momentum from the dodge to bring his knee into Vegeta's abdomen. It is an amazing sequence.
I'm really glad that you had notes for the full sequence here, because it is gorgeous. I wanted to pause and just give a nod to the animators for this one. They did a phenomenal job. There's even one spot, I think, in the sequence that you described, where I think it's Vegeta to Goku as he kicks, just narrowly missing his head, but going through his hair, and you see yellow strands of hair get pulled off of their head. Beautiful attention to detail. The choreography is phenomenal, and the character models, Goku and Vegeta, probably look some of their best in this sequence. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Goku and Vegeta holding nothing back, going full power at each other, right? And I mean, you have to animate that well, and there are a lot of little sequences that look incredible with this. The Goku and Vegeta fight is, I mean, it's everything you would want it to be. And this little sequence right here definitely lives up to that. And I mean, it's, I mean, there's still even more after that. Like, the sequence continues with some excellent sweep kicks from both of them. We get a scene where Vegeta even grabs Goku by both arms and just slams him into the ground. I mean, just ruthlessly just banging him like a gorilla would. Like, it's incredible.
I love that shot, by the way, where he just like grabs him and throws him down into the ground. Like, man.
Oh, it's so fun. It's so great. And I mean, it represents like Vegeta's just, all he wants to do is defeat Goku, and he's almost going primal in that process trying to do it.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very visceral almost. It is very fun to watch. They did a great job with this sequence, but this fight is not going to end anytime soon, as we kind of shift back over to Majin Buu, and we kind of see this round figure kind of stretching out. It's kind of high-pitched, goofy voice, and everybody is kind of confused because Majin Buu is acting like a little child, and so people are like, oh, what happened? Did something go wrong with him getting resurrected? Except for Supreme Kai, who has seen Majin Buu before, and he knows that this is no act, this is no mistake. He knows how dangerous this creature is.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of this, the demeanor is really different than the monster he's been made out to be, right? It's, we've been told from the beginning that this is a universal threat. This is a creature that killed several of the other Supreme Kai, right? And I mean, it's not what you didn't expect a giant pink child to come out of this ball.
No. No, not at all. It does lead Gohan into kind of like a false sense of security or confidence, as he's like, well, this creature is powerful, but it doesn't seem dangerous. I think I can take it.
Yeah, and I mean, it wouldn't be much of a villain if that feeling was wrong, right?
Yeah. And we've also seen that Gohan is, his fighting instincts are not there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, since the fight with Cell, he kind of took some time off, and we did have that commentary between Goku and Vegeta during the battle with Deborah about how slow and sloppy Gohan was and how he's off and he's repetitive and just how far away Gohan was from his peak form.
Yeah, absolutely. We do get Goku and Vegeta briefly arguing, saying, oh, I can sense Majin Buu. We need to do something about it. But Vegeta's not listening to Goku try to argue this point. He wants his fight and he wants to resolve this rivalry with Kakarot.
It's great, actually. Vegeta even laughs at the idea of something else in the universe even comparing to the power of these two Saiyans. He basically is saying that, like, you're just trying to get out of this fight with me. And Goku basically calls BS what Vegeta's saying and tells him that, hey, we're both sensing the same thing. You know the threat that I'm sensing, and you know that I'm not lying.
I love that level of arrogance in Vegeta. Like, there's nothing in the universe that could be even close to our level of power. It's such a good line.
But I mean, there's also nothing else in the universe that matters more than his grudge match with Goku. So it's, you know what he's actually getting at.
It's very on brand for Vegeta.
But we cut back where Babidi is now approaching his father's greatest creation. And he's trying to command Buu. He's trying to tell Buu to listen to him and obey his orders. And we see Buu kind of childishly just turning away with his arms folded, just kind of ignoring and making grunts at Babidi. And at one point, he even turns back around with his tongue sticking out, kind of catching Babidi off guard, who falls back on his feet. And Deborah even calls Buu this overblown, pudgy simpleton. And this upsets Buu a little bit.
Yeah, this is where we kind of get to see why Supreme Kai is so afraid of Buu, as Buu, quicker than Deborah can react, pokes Deburo with two fingers directly in his eyeballs. And then with, I think, a single blow here, knocks him headfirst into one of the nearby mountains. And with two simple attacks, has put down somebody that was on par or better than Gohan.
Yeah, and Boo getting mad, steam pouring out of all of his little vents. This caused a big power spike in Boo that is very apparent to everybody now. And Goku, Vegeta, Goten, and Trunks all sense this spike of power and all kind of look in his direction as suddenly this threat shows up on the map much more than he did before. And it's at this point that Goku is pleading with Vegeta, telling them to quit their battle and to actually think about his family. And it takes a solid punch to the schnoz for Vegeta to be punched to his senses, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, Vegeta basically expresses that Goku is distracted. Vegeta is not going to get the fight that he wants out of Goku because Goku keeps focusing on...
I love this conversation, by the way. Like, the way this is all set up and the way all this plays... Sorry, I'm jumping ahead, but it's really exciting because I forgot how good this was.
No, I very much agree with you. But Vegeta wants his fight and Goku's not focusing on them, which is hilarious. It turns into Vegeta basically conceding and saying, okay, let's go take care of this Majin Buu and then we'll finish this fight. So Vegeta says, all right, get out your Senzu beans. And while Goku is doing that, Vegeta full-on sucker punches Goku in the back of the head, knocking him unconscious.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such a left-field move, right? It seems like Vegeta's agreeing to go, you know, fight the bad guy. They're going to team up. Things are going to get better. And then suddenly you get this twist. You get this move from Vegeta that you didn't expect. And to make it even better, we get Vegeta kind of expressing some internal monologue where he claims that the release of Boo was his fault and it's going to be him that goes and deals with it, which I love. That this is my, this whole situation is my making and I'm going to go fix it. It's both arrogance and self-accountability at the same time. I don't know. It's the move that I didn't realize I wanted Vegeta to make.
It's so good. Like the, I think this whole time, Vegeta honestly expressed it. He was saying, like, you know, nothing out there could be stronger than us. Nothing could even hold a candle to us, us Saiyans. And in his mind, he's like, okay, well, you know, this thing, he sensed it. He knows this thing is strong. He's going to try to go take care of it. I think he even, though, even in this moment, when he's, like, saying goodbye to Goku, he says something about, well, we'll finish our fight if I come back in one piece. So he already knows this is not going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where we flip back over to Boo, who's continuing to refuse his orders until Bobbity threatens to put him back in the ball. And this is where Boo thinks for a moment and then starts showing signs of obedience. He's bowing, he's listening to Bobbity. And this is where we know things are going to go bad. Gohan and the Supreme Kai are trying to hatch a plan, but that's really cut short when Bobbity decides that he's going to have Boo kill the Supreme Kai. And Gohan is forced to take the Supreme Kai and try and flee with him.
Yeah, this is interesting. Gohan, I have to say, sometimes the dialogue is a little bit silly, but maybe that's not the dub's fault. It's just hilarious to me to hear Gohan be like, oh, he's not gonna catch us, don't worry, when Gohan already knows that this Majin Buu has a vastly higher power level than he does. So generally that means that they're faster too.
And I mean, part of this could also be Gohan isn't aware of how out of shape he is, how much slower he probably even is than what he used to be, right? And so maybe his gauge is a little bit off. Maybe he's not comparing, you know, apples to apples the way he should be. But I mean, he's cut off no problem. Boo even kind of gives him a 3-second head start as he poses for a minute and then rockets off and catches Gohan and the Supreme Kai in no time. And things go bad really quickly here when Gohan is basically defeated in a single blow. And then the Supreme Kai, despite some ki blasts, is slapped down and roughed up pretty bad. I mean, it's a bad situation.
I honestly really like this exchange, this altercation between Supreme Kai and Majin Buu. It's short. Like, Supreme Kai has absolutely no chance whatsoever, but he's using, like, these interesting ki, almost psychic-like abilities. It's animated really well. Supreme Kai looks fantastic doing this. And just how visceral it is when Boo almost like crushes the Supreme Kai's head, doesn't fully crush it, but just squeezes his head between his hands. It's really well done.
And I like kind of the way the Supreme Kai uses ki, where it's not like a blast or something as overtly destructive as you would see out of a like our Z fighters or somebody else. It's very like controlled and pinpoint and precise and targeted. Which makes sense because the Kais aren't really like a warrior class or anything like that. They're kind of protectors and they foster life. So it would make sense that they don't have the most destructive of techniques that you would see.
Yeah, I really like that a lot too. The other thing that I like about this is the way that the Supreme Kai uses a technique like that, where you, like you said, it doesn't have any real visual flair to it. Majin Buu kind of returns in kind using a very similar technique, but way more powerful.
Yeah, it comes back like tenfold, and Supreme Kai is just, I mean, he is just knocked haggard by it.
Yeah, and I might have even been jumping ahead a little bit because that one moment that I mentioned might be in the next episode.
I think it is. So let's go ahead and get into there. So that's 125, Turn into Candy, a hungry Majin's bizarre power. And this is where the Supreme Kai continues to take his beating. And Gohan struggles to his feet, fighting a little bit of a second wind, pulling himself out of a crater. And he's trying to help the Supreme Kai, but man, he's in rough shape.
Yeah, this is, I mean, our heroes are just not in a good spot. The Supreme Kai basically sees Gohan as their last hope, though. And he's like, okay, Gohan's alive. That's good. And unfortunately, Gohan immediately gets blasted by Majin Buu with a devastating ki blast. Again, animation here is gorgeous. One of the cool things about this scene, though, that I really, really like is you see Gohan getting rocketed across the earth on the back of this ki blast, and the Supreme Kai, with a flash of his eyes, scatters the ki blast, saving Gohan from almost certain imminent death.
Yeah, and it's the last of the Kai's energy. He more or less passes out after this. I also love that Babidi is just kind of doing his victory dance over the Supreme Kai's battered body while all this is happening, just like trash talking and just generally being a jerk. I don't know. I love it. I think it's great, and it's right in line with Babidi's character. So he started taking his victory lap before victory was even won. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of fun.
He's an eccentric character. Yeah, he's got very strong peaks and valleys of emotions.
But the Supreme Kai is more or less able to save Gohan's life by dissipating the energy with the last of his own energy. And this is where Boo and Babidi start discussing how Boo is going to eat the Supreme Kai. And at first, Babidi's happy because he's like, oh, I'm going to watch the Supreme Kai get just eaten alive. This is great. And this is the best day ever. He continues his victory lap. He's having a great time.
What a terrifying thing to say, first off. But this doesn't come to fruition in the moment as we see a spear lodge itself all the way through Majin Buu's body. And then we see the source of the spear, and it is our good old devil guy, Deborah.
I love that Deborah just pulls weapons out of his ass. I don't know why they decided he does that, but I don't know. It's kind of cool. No one else really does that. But yeah, he pulled a spear out of somewhere and just impaled Majin Buu with it. And when they show Deborah, he's in rough shape, man. Like, he's, it looked like he was barely able to pull himself onto his feet. He's bleeding out of his face. One of his arms looks like it doesn't work so great. I mean, it's bad. It's real bad. And to make things even worse for, well, everybody, all the bad guys here, Goten and Trunks also arrive covertly on the scene.
Yeah, this is super interesting. Goten and Trunks have been trying to find Majin Buu because, I mean, they're kids. They hear all these stories about their parents being heroes and defeating all these bad guys. So they want to get in on the action. They want to see what's happening. And in doing so, they do kind of hide out nearby these two statues of Piccolo and Krillin that we're familiar with. And they also knock over our Piccolo statue and breaking it into a million pieces.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're kids and they show up and they're like, what the heck are these statues? And Trunks kind of like pokes the Piccolo statue and it falls over and breaks. And he's like, oh, all right, well, that's weird, whatever. And they go back to just kind of watching everything that's happening. And I don't know, more on that later, because that's going to come back to haunt Trunks for like 30 seconds. No, not even that, like 10 seconds.
Yeah, basically. It's very, very fast. But we cut over to the action with Deborah, Babidi, and Majin Buu, as Deborah is basically saying, this creature, Majin Buu, is his power and his attitude are, you're not going to be able to control him. We need to get rid of him and do something about him now before it becomes a problem. But Babidi,
I love it because of how true this becomes in the future. Like, how prophetic this was from Deborah. He told him that his disloyal subject is far too powerful for him to control and will eventually betray him and bring calamity upon them all. It's such a great line and a great delivery.
It's excellent. And Deborah is being super smart here. Babidi is being an idiot.
Babidi's drunk with power right now.
100%. And we also then see Majin Buu just casually pull the spear out of his body and then regrow the flesh or gum or whatever his body is that made up the hole in his body. He seems no worse for wear.
Yeah, so that's kind of our first clue that this Boo guy is a pretty tough cookie, which, pun intended. but we flip back over to Vegeta, who decides that the fastest way to get his fight with Boo is to destroy Babidi's ship. It's also his way of ensuring that his fight can't leave the planet. And so it's at around this point that Vegeta also notices that Gohan's energy is gone. And he takes a moment to kind of hang the death of Kakarot's son over his own shoulders. So he kind of makes a note of the stuff he more or less caused.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, despite saying that he wants to be the ruthless killer that he used to be as just a Saiyan warrior, he has a conscience at this point. And he's going to do his best to rectify all of the mistakes that he's made in letting Babidi take control of him. And that's about to come. Babidi's ship is going to reap the damage here pretty shortly.
Mm-hmm. And we flip back over to Boo, who's currently telling Deborah that he's going to eat him. And Deborah, not really understanding what that means, tries to kill Boo, but and kind of like in a flash, in an instant, we see Boo kind of fire out this purple electrical energy that hits Deborah and then turns him into a giant Deborah-looking cookie, and then he is eaten whole in front of everybody.
Yeah, this is, I don't know what would be worse if we saw Boo, like, you know, viscerally tear into Deborah with his teeth and like eat him in the blood and gore, or turning him into a cookie and eating it in one bite.
I have no idea. I mean, like, do you have a moment of helplessness as, like, while you're a cookie? I don't know, man. I don't want to imagine being a cookie and being eaten. That sounds terrible.
I mean, you might, given what we know of one of the characters later who gets turned into a jawbreaker. Yeah, that's the idea of that is just absolutely terrifying.
It's just, do you have enough power level to have emotions or feelings? I mean, Super Jiren was just strong enough to not be controlled by time. I don't know how this stuff works.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But this, as a result of Deborah basically getting killed in this moment, that undoes his petrification of Krillin and Piccolo. And this is the moment that Trunks gets an eye full of just a nasty mess that Piccolo has become.
Yeah, I love it because Trunks has this, you know, I just saw a ghost kind of look on his face. And he takes a moment, like, freaking out, eyes wide open, and tells everybody, like, can we just, like, keep this our little secret? You don't have to tell anyone. I think he says, don't tell my dad.
I love the... I kind of wish that you would get to see more, but I love the little shot that they show of Piccolo's remains, and it's just, like, his foot off by itself, not connected to his body at all.
It's pretty funny, but this moment's very short as Piccolo reveals that he's actually okay, and that it's cool because he can regenerate as long as his head stays intact. Is that a thing? Is that always a thing?
Honestly, and this is something you and I have talked about before, but they've never really specified, like, we've seen Namekians lose their arms many, 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 many times. But we also then saw Cell, who was regenerating using Piccolo's cells. He regenerated from a single nucleus. So Piccolo... Sure. Has better regeneration than we thought.
I think it's one of those ones where just don't think about it too much. You just got to go with it.
Yeah, who knows how it works, but he's alive and he's fine.
Yep, and so Piccolo is fine, Krillin's fine. They're both unstoned, and they are brought back, kind of back up to speed as far as what Goten and Trunks know about the situation. And it's at around this point that Bobbity's ship is destroyed, and it's right before Boo can turn his hungry gaze towards the Supreme Kai, so it's very timely.
Yeah, Vegeta kind of unknowingly saves the Supreme Kai in this moment, but I think that kind of takes us into the next episode.
Yes, which is episode 126, I Will Deal with the Majin, Vegeta's final mortal combat. And Bobbity's freaking out about the loss of his spaceship. And... while he's freaking out, we actually get kind of a badass shot of Vegeta floating down through the fire and smoke, and he has got this just big shit-eating grin on his face. Like, he knows what he just did, and he's proud of it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. He has no care for Bobbity whatsoever. In fact, he's enjoying defying Bobbity, even though he's using him for his own gains. And Vegeta lays eyes on Majin Buu for the first time here, and this is about to turn into a full-on drag-out brawl between these two.
Yeah, and it's a very serious note here because Vegeta's all business, and the first thing he asks is if this was the cruel monster that killed Gohan. And Piccolo from the side, with his kind of super hearing, hears this and actually falls to his knees, knowing his relationship with Gohan, right? And it's kind of setting the tone or setting the stakes for this battle, because now there's some skin in the fight and everyone's aware of it.
Absolutely. Vegeta, I mean, as per usual for our Saiyan Prince, exchanges some verbal barbs here. But the thing that I love about this scene is Vegeta staring down this big pink blob that is Majin Buu, this terrifying monster. All Vegeta can see in his eyes is this image of Goku over and over and over. And we kind of get Vegeta reminiscing about all of the events that he's had to deal with surrounding Kakarot, whether it be Goku defeating Frieza or Goku saving Vegeta and everybody else on Earth by teleporting Cell and his exploding body away from Earth. And all of this is kind of weighing on Vegeta, where Vegeta's like, well, I'm not going to let you do this anymore, Kakarot. I'm going to be the one to save everybody. I'm going to be the one to fix this. I'm the one who fucked this up. I'm going to take care of it.
It's kind of the same reel that we saw earlier when Vegeta was laying out his grievances against Goku, except we get it kind of in a different tone this time. It's rather than being jealous and angry, it's more of him setting things right and kind of entering the limelight as the hero rather than the second fiddle. And so it's almost laying it out as if Vegeta's viewing this battle as kind of his destiny, his ultimate performance. And this is where he sets the expectations for himself to kind of make everything right that he screwed up until this point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I like the framing for that, both in the show and the way that you described it, because Vegeta is... In a funny way, while he wanted to defeat Goku, I think there's a part of him that wants to play the role that Goku is playing. He doesn't want to, as you said, he doesn't want to be second fiddle. If he's going to be the... He wants to be better than Goku, but he also wants to play the role that Goku is playing and always being the one who defeats the big bad guy, which is kind of hilarious, but also, like... It makes sense. If he wants to be better than Goku, he wants to do it in every way possible.
You know, and the one thing that I wish Goku would have brought up and presented to Vegeta is Vegeta never would have become as powerful as he is now if he didn't have those people to fight for and those friendships he had formed, right? If he didn't have those more protective relationships rather than the aggressive ones that he had in his, I guess you could say, previous life. And how much stronger he's gotten fighting for other people. It would have been nice to just to hear kind of what his take on that sort of conversation would have been.
That's a good point. I would have loved to have heard that. I do like that Goku specifically pointed out when Vegeta was like, I want to throw all of these attachments away so that I can be my best self, so that I can be stronger. And Goku was like, you don't believe that. Like, you do. You don't, there's no way that you can't care about your family and the people that you've become close with here. You're lying to yourself. He doesn't say it quite with those words, but that's the implication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I mean, this is the Vegeta arc, if you want to put it like this episode and like the 10 or 15 episodes before it. It's all about our Prince of All Foreheads. And I mean, this is a hell of a buildup that they've put on for him. Like, the show is about to really begin here.
This is one of the reasons why I am a Majin Buu arc apologist, is because I love Vegeta's story arc in this saga. Like, it's, I know the Buu arc has a lot of problems, but Vegeta's story is really well done.
Well, this is where Vegeta powers up, charges in, and starts laying a just unholy smackdown on the pink blob. And we see every blow that Vegeta lands just leaves this deep just indent on Boo's face and body. And Boo is just being knocked around, bouncing off the ground. Like, he's basically just a beanbag that's just being kicked and forced around. But every time Vegeta lands a blow, there's a moment where Boo kind of stands up and kind of, I guess, tenses up for a moment and pops every blow back into its proper place. So we see this, you know, damage is happening, but it's recovering about as fast as he's dealing it.
Yeah, beanbag is probably an appropriate term here, because it just seems like none of these blows, as heavy as they feel and as devastating as they land, it doesn't seem like they do any harm to Majin Buu. Majin Buu, up to this point, is not retaliating either, but that is going to quickly change here as Vegeta is just making zero headway. Buu then starts to, well, first we get the, I don't even know what the attack is called, but it's the attack with Vegeta's, like, three fingers out. I think that there's a name for it in the games, but it puts a full-on hole through Majin Buu, which, as we've already seen, Buu can regenerate from.
I like the way the blast is animated here, too. The way that the energy kind of builds up and swirls around him, and Vegeta holds that pose kind of defiantly against the giant pink monster. It's animated pretty well, and that this little, almost a pinpoint blast that just goes straight, clear through Majin Buu, the whole animation of it is really well done, and they're really taking their time to kind of build Vegeta up at this point. Even though, after this beautiful blast, Buu just kind of lays down for a moment, stands back up, and we see him just hold his breath for a moment and then pop that hole back shut. And Buu, at this point, is a little mad. He's a little mad that Vegeta hurt Majin Buu.
Just a little bit miffed. And this is going to be the point where Majin Buu begins to retaliate, basically charging up his energy, creating this pink aura surrounding him, and he just emits this vast ki blast surrounding his entire body that emits outward from him. And as the shockwave and the crater from the ki blast is shown to us, the audience, we get to see the aftermath of Vegeta, who is bloodied, one arm dangling by his side. He is not looking good from this single attack.
Yeah, Vegeta's, I mean, he's in rough shape. One of his arms looks lifeless and bloody. And on top of that, the Supreme Kai is nowhere to be seen. And Piccolo's kind of freaking out because the defender and guardian of the universe is possibly dead at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a devastating blow. I had to look it up. It's his final impact is Vegeta's attack for that one.
Not Final Flash, Final Impact. It's way different.
Right.
Don't get that confused.
That's right. But this, I think that actually ends that episode, which takes us into the next one.
Yes, which is episode 127, For His Beloved Ones, The End of the Proud Warrior. And Buu decides that he doesn't want to play with Vegeta anymore. So he waves, bye-bye, 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 bye.
This is what I was talking about when I said I wanted to talk more about Majin Buu and we got deeper into his stuff. He is so fucking annoying.
I sort of get what they were doing. It's kind of the, you know, we're trying to challenge your expectations, right? We build up this big galactic or universal threat for how many episodes, and it comes out and it's this giant temper tantrum looking child. Yeah. Okay, cool. There's only so much of that I can take before I just don't care about this villain.
Yeah, it's, I agree with you. I do like the twist and circumventing expectations. Maybe it's just his voice that I just can't handle over long periods of time. And by long, I mean more than 2 seconds. But he does have some really cool techniques, which we see as he like starts to pull off part of his body and turns it into this long string that he holds in one hand. And then after shooting ki blasts at Vegeta to make him kind of dance the way he wants, Majin Buu throws the string of his body at Vegeta, which wraps Vegeta up and binds him in this tight dough ball.
I love it, too, because Majin Buu is not fighting hard right now. He's, like, skipping towards Vegeta, just all childish and carefree, and launching ki blasts out of his mouth, by the way. He's just, like, spitting ki blasts at Vegeta. The whole thing is immature, and it very much matches his character, which I do like. And the bubblegum taffy stuff he pulled out of his torso or from his torso or that is his torso that wraps Vegeta. I mean, we saw something like this in the original Dragon Ball, right? When Goku was fighting the big dragon thing? I forget the name of it.
It starts with a G, I think. I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, too.
For some reason, it just occurred to me where he uses like his bubblegum taffy attack or something like that.
He does. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's very similar. I think the only difference is that one's like purple and the monster kind of spits it out, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it's a very similar technique, and Buu uses that to pummel Vegeta, just lands on top of him with all of his weight and then turns his face into a punching bag.
Yeah, and Trunks is starting to lose his cool just watching his dad just get mercilessly beaten. I mean, Vegeta's unable to defend himself. This is a completely one-sided affair. And even Piccolo kind of warns him, like, hey, settle down, don't. And then, of course, Trunks just loses his cool and flies off. And Goten follows in tow. And as Piccolo grabs his ankle and tells him, like, no, wait, stay here, he's like, no, like, come on, would you let this happen to Gohan? And then flies off anyway.
I'm glad you paused on this because I love this dialogue and this exchange, because Trunks flies off, like you said, without Piccolo even being able to stop him. But Piccolo grabs Goten and is like, Goten, if you go out there, you're going to get yourself killed just like Trunks is about to. And Goten's like, let me go. If Gohan were here, he would go out there. He would try to help. And like, this hits Piccolo right in the feels, and it lets Goten get just enough leverage to rip his arm out of Piccolo's grasp and go help Trunks. I love this so much. Like, it literally brought me to tears when Goten said that to Piccolo. I was like, oh, and, you know right where to hit him.
And just as a reminder, Piccolo overheard that Gohan was dead with the super hearing. Goten and Trunks and them don't know about that. So that's why that hits extra hard, is Piccolo was kind of holding this feeling inside of himself at that moment by himself. So it just, I mean, it struck a weak nerve at the right time.
That's another really good point too. Yeah, all of that combined makes this such a small little piece of dialogue, and it's just perfectly written. I loved it. But this results in Trunks heading out there unable to sit by and watch his father get beat to death. Trunks delivers a heavy blow to Majin Buu's head, knocking Buu off of Vegeta. This had kind of a feeling of like, it reminded me, funny enough, a parallel with Piccolo. It kind of has that feeling of when Piccolo saves Goku from Frieza back on Namek, like completely outclassed by this monster, but still able to have just enough of like a sucker punch to get the monster off of their friend.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. They basically save Vegeta's life at this point, and they have just enough time to kind of get Vegeta unraveled from this constricting length of goo that Buu had thrown around him. And Trunks is kind of yelling out at this point because Vegeta is barely conscious. He's kind of, his wits are gone at this point. And he's even screaming about how he's proud of his dad, claiming that nobody in the universe could defeat him. There's no way he could be like lost right now.
I'm going to gush about this, but I love the writing for Goten and Trunks here. I really love, and I love the performance by the actors here too, because it feels like a 7 or 8 year old kid who just absolutely has this hero image of their father, like pure admiration, and is unwilling to accept that their father could be bested. I mean, it's very core to Vegeta's identity that he's a powerful warrior, and so Trunks views him as such. And so I really, really like getting to hear Trunks just be like, Dad, I know nobody can beat you. Like, you need to get up and fight this guy.
And it's a great moment for Vegeta, who's kind of, you know, he's trying to reconcile his old warrior pride with his new family and his new lifestyle, right? And so it's kind of his old warrior self being beaten and then his new family and his new life coming to his rescue. So I think it's very symbolic in that sense, too.
That's a really great point, too. And it's honestly interesting to see how Vegeta handles it. Like, I was surprised in a way, like kind of rewatching this, how calm and collected Vegeta is about being saved in this moment. But he mostly is just like, you guys need to get out of here. I'm going to put the hurt on this monster.
And just real quick, happening in the background. Piccolo finds Bobbidi by himself, and Bobbidi tries to like fight off Piccolo for a second with his weird magic, and then Piccolo karate chops him in half. But so Bobbidi is now in a crater in two or three pieces. But yeah, I'm glad. Screw that guy.
Yeah, screw that guy.
But yeah. We cut back over to the important stuff. Vegeta kind of takes a moment to look off into the distance, and this is where he quietly tells Trunks to take care of his mother. And Trunks is rightly confused and kind of asks him, What did you ask me to do? What are you saying? And this is where Vegeta tells him to take cover because he has to do the rest of this fight alone. And Trunks and Goten rightly protest. They don't want to see Vegeta fight alone. And they even bring up a decent point that maybe if they all fought together, they might actually be able to overcome this evil baddie.
Yeah, there's a little bit of dialogue here. I think Vegeta says something about like it won't matter how many people we send at him. This guy's he basically expresses how powerful Majin Buu is. And there's a part that I really love that made me laugh out loud, where Goten and Trunks are both like, why are you being so weird? Normally you're so egotistical. And they both kind of like stop themselves and like cover their mouths and stuff. And Vegeta doesn't even respond to it whatsoever.
He knows they're right. He knows they're right.
So he doesn't even say anything, but they're both like, oh shoot, we just got ourselves in trouble.
And I mean, it's such like little kids to just point out the obvious thing, right? That they don't really have conversational tact or social tact. It's just like, well, hold on. Normally you're kind of an arrogant doucher. What's going on here?
Exactly. That's why I love it, because again, this is great writing for Goten and Trunks, which it makes me so mad about what they do with them in Super, because they are so well written in the Buu arc. Like, they feel like children who have power of the gods. It's just really good writing for them.
Things continue forward here, though, as Vegeta tells Trunks that even as a baby, he never embraced his son because he always wanted to make him a tougher man. And it's at this point that Vegeta decides to actually give his son a hug. And using his one good arm, he pulls Trunks in for kind of a heartfelt embrace, and probably the first time that Trunks and Vegeta really actually shared that kind of emotion together.
Absolutely. Yeah, Vegeta even expresses as much. And I like the way the dialogue here was slightly changed from the original, I think. Because I don't think that he expressed previous in the original Funimation dub that his reason for doing that. I don't think he expressed that he wanted to make Trunks a harder man. So I really like just that little detail. But this hug turns into Vegeta karate chopping Trunks in the side of the neck and knocking him unconscious. And Goten's pretty upset about it.
Yeah, Goten starts yelling at Vegeta, like asking him, why would you do that? Why would you do that to your own son? Like, that's so mean of you. And starts like almost throwing a temper tantrum, kind of banging his fists in the air. And I mean, Vegeta responds with dipping down low and giving Goten just this sucker punch to the gut that impacts him hard. Goten's hair goes from the Super Saiyan yellow back to black, and he passes out as well. And now we've got two unconscious little Saiyan childs.
Well, our big green dad is going to pick up those childs, and he has a little bit of dialogue here with Vegeta. Vegeta basically, you know, they both of these guys know what's going on. They both know that Vegeta is in this fight to sacrifice himself to try to finish off Majin Buu. And so Vegeta is asking Piccolo, am I going to get to see Kakarot in the afterlife? Because as we all know, Goku right now is still technically dead. He has a halo.
Yeah, and I like that Piccolo tells him, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, that you and Goku have a very different fate, that Vegeta has claimed far too many innocent lives, and that likely his body and memory will both be erased and he will be reborn. And Vegeta just kind of accepts his fate at this point and turns himself towards the angry pink monster. So I love that that Vegeta knows what he's signing up for and knows what he's walking into.
And he does it with a smile. I also kind of like the, like you described, they actually really touch, they give a good description of what happens to them when they die. And it touches on more like a reincarnation sort of idea, which I think is pretty interesting, but it's not something they focus on heavily. But this turns into Piccolo flying away with Goten and Trunks, taking Krillin along with him. They get away as far as they can, and Vegeta turns to face Majin Buu, this kind of golden aura surrounding his body as he gets ready for his final attack.
Yeah, as the wind and his golden energy begin to swirl around him, almost becoming like a pillar of an effect around his now glowing body, we see little kind of speckles or sparks of this golden energy begin to come off kind of the edges and of his features. And we start seeing this happening on Majin Buu as well, as kind of the energy starts building. And this eventually gives way to this mighty roar that makes the landscape become awash with this golden light, and the entire horizon is filled with a colossal blast as Vegeta begins to sacrifice his life to end the universal threat of Majin Buu.
Yeah, and of course, as this ki blast goes off, you see it kind of hitting Majin Buu. You almost see this visage of Majin Buu getting wiped away. The episode had to end on that cliffhanger. It had to. Like, of course, they were going to set it there. But that takes us to the next one.
Yes, which is episode 128, A Nightmare Revisited, the Immortal Monster Majin Buu. I wonder what happens this episode, just based off that title.
I wish those titles would not give everything away, but...
I do have a quick note here. This is one episode where I felt like the episode bounced around to the different story plots, like, a lot. And so my notes are a little scattered here, but I'm going to try and stay on subject.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it as best as we can on target. But we kind of start the scene right where we left off in this moment, where Vegeta is similar to Buu's first ki attack against Vegeta, where it's just energy emitting all around his body in this sort of dome of yellow light. And even this even cuts to, like you said here, Dayton, where it cuts to some of our other group of like Chi-Chi, Yamcha, Bulma, Android 18, and they are in a plane, if you want to call it that, but they're kind of thinking about like, oh, all the stuff that happened at the tournament, all the people who died, like, we need to collect the Dragon Balls. We need to figure out what's going on. But their plane gets hit by the aftershock of Vegeta's attack, and their plane actually goes down. 18 saves them, but that's how vast this attack was.
The big takeaway from their scene in the plane, though, is that Bulma starts becoming kind of overwhelmed with the sense of dread, and her heart starts beating fast, and she knows something is wrong deep down inside of her, and she can't quite place why, but it almost seems like she probably knows why.
I really like this a lot. Even before that, Bulma was kind of thinking on, like, I can't believe Vegeta would kill all those people. Like, what is he doing? What happened to him? And now she's got this feeling of, like, something's wrong. Something just feels off.
Yeah, and we kind of move back over to the aftermath of Vegeta's blast. And it shows us kind of this gray, dull form of Vegeta's body floating in the air that we see slowly start descending and then falling down into the crater he created, and then just exploding into this ashen dust that just gets blown away in the wind. And so this is the end, the final sacrifice of Prince Vegeta.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I think we skipped over it a little bit, but I do like Vegeta's dialogue at the tail end of the last episode where Vegeta reiterates, this is for Trunks, this is for Bulma, and even for you, Kakarot. So we get, I mean, again, Vegeta trying to take on the role of the hero after immediately having taken on the role of the villain. And he sacrificed himself thinking that it would save everyone from the terror that is Majin Buu.
Yeah, and Piccolo and Krillin kind of sense the end of Vegeta and they don't sense anything else going on. And Piccolo decides that he's going to hand the young boys off to Krillin so that way he can go investigate. And he gives Krillin probably the worst task of the day, which is breaking the news to both families that Vegeta and Gohan were both lost in the battle with Buu, which is a major raw deal.
Yeah, that's rough, man. It's kind of funny, though, because Piccolo's, you know, not the most social, but he goes back to check on the situation with Buu and Vegeta, and in doing so, he finds the remains of Babidi. Babidi, using some sort of barrier magic, managed to protect himself, or at least the half of his body that's still around. But before Piccolo can act on that and finish off Babidi once and for all, the remains of Majin Buu begin to collect themselves into humanoid form.
You know, this scene is absolutely ridiculous because the little bits start pulsating and then forming into miniature Majin Buus that all fly to the same spot to form larger Majin Buus. Okay, okie dokie.
The part that was goofy to me was that they make the tiny Buus that make five medium Buus, and then the five medium Buus make one big Buu. Like, why all those steps?
I mean, I don't know. I guess we're trying to be ridiculous. They're trying to be annoying, I guess. So I guess job well done. You did it. Boo yeah. Annoys me.
Yeah, success. I mean, this, though, kind of results in Vegeta failed. Boo is still here. And Piccolo gets the fuck out of there as fast as he can. And it results in Boo finding Babidi, where Babidi's like, hey, heal me, servant. And we find that not only can Boo regenerate, he can also heal people from, I mean, I don't know what the limitations are, but Babidi's missing more than half of his body.
Yeah, it's, I mean, after Babidi threatens to reball Boo, Boo turns, fires his regeneration beam or whatever the heck it is. Babidi's regenerated back to full. All of his limbs are back on. He's looking great. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's another power that Boo has. I don't know. He's kind of a weird guy. But yeah, that happens. And then we flip back over to Piccolo, who informs Krillin of the bad news. And the two make their way to Kame's lookout since it'll be safer there.
Yeah. We also then cut briefly to the Supreme Kai, who did not get completely wiped out, but he's on death's door as he kind of makes his way towards the body of Gohan as best he can. We then cut over, like you said,
a lot
this
of
bounces around, yeah. but we cut back to Kami's lookout. They basically tell Korin and Yajirobe what's going on. Then we cut over to Goku. Goku's up again. But
there's one note with Korin and Yajirobe that's important, and that's that they gave Goku the last three Senzu beans they had, so there are no more Senzu beans. And then when Goku wakes up, he mentions that Vegeta had eaten the last Senzu bean they had. So Senzu beans are off the menu at this point.
That's a good point. That's going to be important moving forward because, well, for one, Goku's pretty beat up and he's going to use his instant transmission to kind of hone in on his friends and figure out what's going on. I think we basically get the tail end of this episode. This is a bit of a mess of an episode.
It's a bit of a mess.
But the tail end is just kind of showing us again the Supreme Kai and Gohan, who are both basically on death's door as Majin Buu is now flying through cities, kind of just destroying things willy-nilly.
Yeah, Babidi's pretty pissed about his spaceship and how everything's kind of turned out. So he's got plans to exact vengeance on the planet. So he sort of very early starts this process at the end of this episode, which brings us into the next episode, which is episode 129, A Secret Plan to Defeat Buu. Its name is Fusion. And yeah, we get a scene with Bulma, Chi-Chi, Yamcha, Master Roshi, Android 18, Marin, Videl, and they're all searching the planet for the Dragon Balls, except they've already found six of them, so we sped through that. And so they're on their way to the seventh. This episode is just kind of some beats for me. I don't know if there's a lot of important stuff in this episode or stuff to really talk about. But, I mean, we get the lookout with Dende and company talking about their game plan and how screwed they all are. Piccolo finds out that the Supreme Kai being broken or dead is, you know, kind of a bummer. He wish he wasn't broken or dead. So they lament about that for a little bit. And so they're just like, they don't have a game plan. I will say it would have been neat to have like Piccolo or Dende maybe reach out to say like King Kai or something to get like more universal help, since, you know, the Supreme Kai is involved and you kind of should be able to pull help from, you know, the divine beings, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Like, Piccolo trained with King Kai, right? So he could probably communicate with King Kai. Of course, he's aware of King Kai, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they would call for help at this point. I don't know if they know anybody else who could even be of aid, but
I feel like King Kai would have to know somebody, right? But then again, I feel like at some point it's mentioned that King Kai had never actually met the Supreme Kai, so I'm not sure.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting. But yeah, that's not the route they go at this point. We do get to see Goku kind of make his way to the lookout. So everybody's excited to see him since he's not dead yet, sort of. Still got a halo. He's only got maybe another, I don't know, 12 hours on the Earth. Because remember, he only had 24 hours for the tournament.
We did have enough time in Kai to show another scene of Master Roshi kind of being a perv when he falls over into a plane under Android 18. Glad that made the cut.
There's going to be more stuff like that that I'm like, why was this left in here?
Well, let me sum it up for you. They find the seventh Dragon Ball and Master Roshi has to fart on a dinosaur to get it.
That is the other part that I was referring to as, why was that left in here?
We could skip all that. Just he gets the Dragon Ball.
Yeah, we skipped the first six. Why not the seventh?
I don't know. But anyway, I suppose the most important part happens towards the end. Goku tells the lookout crew that he and Vegeta were almost the same power level. So if Vegeta couldn't defeat Majin Buu, then he sure as hell can't. But while he was in Otherworld, he did learn the power of fusion from the Metamorans. Have we heard of that before this point, or is that brand new?
Having watched it before, that's what they called it before, is the Metamoran fusion. Okay. But it's in terms of this run of watching it, yeah, we haven't heard about the Metamorans up to this point in Kai.
Okay. It was just one of those things where it just kind of, I don't know, Goku disappears off scene and then suddenly he meets an alien race and learns something new. It gets, I don't know, catches you off guard.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, he's spent 7 years in the afterlife at this point, so he's probably learned a few things, met a few weird people.
I just want to be there for the training, man. I just want to be there for that cool stuff.
I get it. They got to have some way of, like, pulling the rug out from the audience and surprising them, I guess.
So Goku has met Metamorans in Otherworld and has more or less learned how the fusion works, but hasn't done it himself. But he's a savant, so we all believe in him. But the big issue is that Goku doesn't have somebody of similar size and power level for him to fuse with. You know, Gohan and Vegeta being the primary candidates, both now gone. And so Mr. Popo suggests that maybe they can use fusion with Goten and Trunks to try and get them to become the strong fighter.
I am going to continue to harp on the fact that I love the way Goten and Trunks are written in here. This is a great tool and a great way to make them relevant, even though they are, while they're powerful, they're still much weaker than, you know, all the other adults, or at least the other Super Saiyans here. So the one way you can make them relevant is by combining their power.
And I mean, it's, you want to see, as we're following these characters, or these characters are going along the main story with the main group, you kind of want to see them starting to, I guess, level up or get stronger or learn things as they're dealing with threats. So maybe at the beginning, they're not very useful. Then later on, they're kind of useful. And you start building that path towards them becoming relevant characters, right? Like, it makes sense that Goku wasn't as powerful as Master Roshi when they first met. And you had to do some adventuring and traveling and learning. And this is kind of the start of their adventure, right? And so, like, the seeds are being planted right now for them to be relevant later.
Yes, 100%. And this kind of turns into Goku basically being like, okay, I can teach the boys how to do the fusion dance in the time that I'm here. But he also, I think, asks Piccolo to continue the training because, again, Goku only has so many hours remaining and the boys are still sleeping off their hangover from getting knocked out at the moment.
Yeah. And so Piccolo agrees. He says, yep, once you're gone, I'll continue the training with them. And so they have their game plan now. It's Goten and Trunks. It's kind of their turn to be in the limelight. And I love that they're getting training from Goku and then they're going to get training from Piccolo. Like, it's so great to see both of them kind of entering that being the master rather than the fighter form right now.
100%. It's also funny because Goten and Trunks are going to get training from both Piccolo and Goku, who are effectively the two teachers that Gohan had as a kid. So I also like that kind of parallel and callback too.
I didn't even think about that. That's super fun. But yeah, that wraps up that episode, which brings us into episode 130. Found a faint ray of hope. Awaken, warriors. And Bulma and company summon Shenron. That's how this one starts.
Yeah, their goal here is basically to resurrect all of the people who were killed at the World Martial Arts Tournament. I think most of which, if not all of which, were killed by Vegeta.
Yeah, and my favorite part about the scene is just how much Videl's mind is properly blown seeing all of this.
As it should be, right? This is something that we talked about a lot when we were still in the World Martial Arts Tournament, where we're getting to see what it's like for a normie to dive deep into this strange world that our Z Fighters have just kind of taken as normal up to this point.
I mean, yeah, it's been a hell of a 24 hours for Videl, finding out that, you know, how powerful everyone is, that her crush was the one who actually saved the world from Cell, finding out that her crush's dad is dead, but also visiting. I mean, there's a lot to digest if you're her.
Yeah, 100%. And so they do use their first wish. Remember, I think Shenron can grant 3 wishes at this point in the show. So they use their first wish to resurrect everybody who had been killed back. And we do get to see many of the people from the tournament get resurrected. Also, Kabito gets resurrected here because he was killed by Deborah. I think they basically, the wish was resurrect everybody who's been killed in the past day or something to that effect.
Everyone who was killed in the last day who wasn't bad.
Yeah. I love that they always add that little caveat.
So the dragons should just know, like, it's if they're on the naughty list, they don't come back. And once the dragon is summoned, the lookout party start freaking out because they need the dragon and they can't be making wishes right now. So Goku instant transmissions over to stop them. And he's able to stop them after the first wish. But Dende tells them to not make any more wishes because if they don't, they can summon the dragon in 4 months rather than a year.
All right, 2 things. One, these rules for the Dragon Balls keep getting weirder and more random. The 4-month thing after making one wish, like, what in the world? 2, the idea here is that they want Shenron to be available so that they can resurrect people who get killed by Majin Buu, because they know it's going to take them time to train Goten and Trunks to learn how to fuse. And in that time, they're worried about the devastation that Babidi and Buu are going to present to the world.
You know, my first thought was, do you really think you have 4 months of Buu being on your planet? Because I feel like, I don't know, with a threat of that level, you might not have days.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, but they, after using that first wish, they don't have much of a choice, right? Like,
I don't think of a better wish. I wish I was stronger than Boo. Let's try that one.
That's a good point, actually, yeah. I mean, we already saw with...
I'm sure there are rules against that. I don't know. There's always rules against that kind of stuff.
I mean, oftentimes they just use the idea that, oh, that is beyond my power, or yeah, whatever Shenron wants to say in that moment. But we've already seen Piccolo, because we have future sight, we've seen Piccolo wish for more power on the dragon in Dragon Ball Super Superheroes. So,
The rules are fuzzy. I mean, it just sounds like rules lawyering to me, where if you can read like dragon wishing rules in the right way, you can technically be correct.
They are so confusing, so hard to follow. They change with the whim of the writers, let's be honest. Like, they are just whatever the writer wants them to be in that moment.
Anyway, yeah, we had to stop on that for a moment because it's, I don't know what the rules are, but whatever, we're going with it. But hey, Kabito's back alive because of that wish, and he quickly finds the badly hurt Supreme Kai and heals him back to health.
Yeah, and their next destination is to find Gohan and basically do the same thing. Because again, the Supreme Kai thinks that Gohan is their last hope to defeat Majin Buu.
Yeah, and once again, we're cutting around a bunch. We're back to the lookout, and this is where Goku explains the plan to everyone's families. And I'm sorry, we're not back to the lookout yet. We're back to Goku, who's going to teleport everybody back to the lookout as a part of their plan. Sorry, right. I forgot he hadn't gone back yet.
Lots of bouncing around, lots going on. But he does grab everybody, including like Bulma, Chi-Chi, Videl, all of them, and teleports them to the lookout. We do find... we kind of cut over at that point to Majin Buu in the city, which I kind of like this. Also, I didn't point this out, and I have to, because I've been knocking the music in Kai a lot. There is a track for Majin Buu specifically. I think it's shortly after he gets released, and then also here in the city. It is like this eerie, it kind of has a feeling of like the Faulkner score a little bit, because it has like a little bit of like an electronic sound to it, but it is the perfect amount of like eerie for all of the events that are surrounding Majin Buu. I really, really like it.
I mean, this is the scene, right, where Buu's like flying through the amusement park and knocking people on roller coasters off the rails and just kind of being a general jerk. Am I remembering correctly?
I mean, kind of. This is also like it. There is that, but he goes like down into the city and he gets in the way of some guy on a car. And the only reason I'm pointing this out is because this is a visceral scene, because Boo takes off part of his body like he did with Vegeta and then wraps this guy up in his body gum and murders him by squeezing him to death. Like, we don't get to see the full visceral scene, but holy shit, that is scary.
Yeah, and people are just standing around watching this happen as he just murders someone in cold blood in the middle of the street. He does afterwards enter like a bakery.
Yeah,
I love the way he enters the bakery, because he walks up to it, like turns 90 degrees to like begin entering. And as the glass door is sliding open, he doesn't wait for it to fully open, steps into it. And you see his face and gut kind of press up against the glass as he shatter walks through it on his way to get himself some cake.
I also deeply love that detail because Boo has no idea. He's not existed, for one, on Earth, but he doesn't have any idea, like, what glass is. As you see him, like, breaking his way, his hands just pushing through glass to grab a bunch of cakes to shove into his face. This scene, honestly, it's mostly fluff, let's be real, but it's also kind of character building for Boo. And it's got some really great little details that give you a lot of insight into Boo's mind, I guess.
It's kind of fun. And you're right, it is. And these are very brief moments, right? But they give you a lot of character to build on. And so I don't mind it when they do something like this. Goten and Trunks taking some time to go pee, or Master Roshi being a perv. We don't need that stuff. That stuff doesn't really build character. Except Goten and Trunks did have a pee off to see who could pee the furthest. So that's important.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess that's character building in a way.
but aside from that, we are back over to the Supreme Kai, who's talking with Kibito about his plan. And his plan is to use Gohan and make him far more powerful than Boo. And it's after revealing his plan that they find Gohan's battered body, very faint in life source, and decide to bring him back to the world of Kais, a place that no mortal has ever entered.
I like this. I like this a lot. So we're seeing kind of two different plans underway here. And we kind of cut back over to the lookout. And I believe this is the moment where, now that most of our Z fighters and friends and family are collected on the lookout, Goku is the one who has to deliver the news that Gohan is dead, which we as the audience know that's not true, but they believe that he is dead. And Vegeta is dead.
This is heavy news because he's telling Bulma that her husband is dead. He's telling Videl that her new crush or boyfriend is dead. And Chi-Chi, her son, is dead. Like, this is very heavy news. And I like the way that Goku delivers it, because he almost looks like he's maintaining, like, this kind of stoicness where he's just like, I'm just going to tell you the raw news and just kind of hold it together. Like, I don't have time to have emotions.
I 100% agree. Again, Boo Goku might be my favorite Goku. He's an adult here. He's thinking about things logically. He's thinking, okay, you know, yeah, this sucks, but I have limited time. I have stuff I have to get done to make sure that the rest of my friends and family are safe and the rest of the planet is safe. So I'm just giving it to you straight. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I'm letting you guys know these are the facts. This is what's happening. And this is what we're going to do about it.
Yeah. And I don't know how else you would deliver that kind of news with, you know, like that is tremendously bad news that you need to deliver. And you're on a time limit. So, I mean, well done. Good writing. Good voice acting, too. Schemmel does a great delivery here. I mean, it's 10 out of 10. The writing here, the delivery here, it's just a very good scene.
100%. I also want to pause briefly because I love Bulma's scream. Like, the delivery for that by the voice actress, so beautiful. And the music here is this very, like, sad, somber music. Such a good scene. Like, you can feel the pain from Bulma as she, like, cries and screams about her husband being killed.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And Bulma's had a lot hanging on her shoulders for, you know, the last most of this day, right? She had to... Can you imagine what she was feeling while she was sitting there next to her friends as she watches her husband turn and kill countless people in front of them? And I mean, there's no way you don't hold some of that guilt on your own shoulders. And then you have to travel around with them the rest of the day. And it's you're trying to figure this out, because if there's not a reasonable explanation, I mean, you look like a crazy person, too.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, all of it, thinking about all of that, like, everything on Bulma's shoulders in this moment, God, it's making me teary-eyed. It's really good. Dragon Ball, admittedly, does not do emotional scenes super well from like the from a sad perspective, but especially from a relationship perspective. But this one is very, very well done. We do kind of like shift forward as everybody's trying to just cope with the news, as we kind of get a shot of Goten and Trunks, and everybody's like, well, I guess we just have to put our hopes on the kids at this point.
Yeah, and as they kind of start regrouping, things have to come to a halt because we hear the annoying little rat voice of Bobbity beginning to appear in everyone's heads as he makes an announcement to the planet. And that's where this episode ends and moves into episode 131. Find the nuisances, Bobbity's retaliation begins. And continuing his announcement, he tells the planet that he needs help locating these three people. And everyone closes their eyes and they see the images of Piccolo, Goten, and Trunks. And after showing them these three people, he shows them an image of an entire city and its population being lifted into the air and turned into candy and then eaten by Boo. And then threatens to do the same to the rest of the planet unless these three are tracked down for him.
This is terrifying. This is probably thousands of people murdered within a few seconds. Like, the other interesting thing is the entire city is basically empty at that point, and then Boo destroys the city with ease. And this is, as we kind of like zoom back in on our Z Fighters, this guilt is weighing heavy on Piccolo, because Bobbity's game here is basically expressing that they're going to continue doing this until they find the three, Piccolo, Goten, and Trunks.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to be a lot of death that Piccolo views as needless if he just goes out and faces them. But, I mean, Goku makes it clear that there's no way he can leave. If Piccolo dies, the Dragon Balls... I believe the Dragon Balls go with him, right? Or no, is that Dende's now?
That's Dende's now, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, you could have let Piccolo go. Oh, no, he's got to train Gohan and Goten. That's what he's got. Or Goten and Trunks. I forgot about that. That's what he tells Piccolo is, no, you can't leave because someone has to train the boys while I'm gone. And if you don't do that, then the planet truly is doomed.
Yeah, they had to give Piccolo some other reason for not being able to die.
Yeah. Sorry, Piccolo. You almost had a free pass, but nope.
Not quite. I think the other important thing here, too, that Goku tries to express is, hey, do you really think the deaths are going to stop if you hand yourselves over? I mean, you think Bobbity and Boo are just going to sit on their hands and do nothing? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah, and Piccolo more or less grits his teeth and accepts the reality, but I mean, it's the stressful situation starting to weigh on pretty much all of our Z Fighters is everybody's lost something at this point.
The interesting thing here is that we see people, just civilians, freaking out, like, give these people over to this Bobbity and this Boo people. Like, we don't want to die because of something that they did. They don't understand the whole story. And we even see one of the employees at the World Martial Arts Tournament contact Bobbity and say, hey, these guys were at our tournament earlier today. Here are their names. And Bobbity's like, I don't care what their names are. Where are they? And the guy doesn't know where they are. And so, again, I want to zoom in on this visceral scene of Bobbity being like, why are you wasting my time then? And he uses his magic to pop this guy's head like a pimple. It's awesome, visceral. It is, I mean, it's kind of censored out. Like, this is a young kids, not a young kids, but this is a
young adult.
I don't know. Young adult show. Yeah, let's put it that way. So we don't get to see the full visceral gore, but still really scary moment for our villain here.
Also, I'm glad that guy's head got popped. He was going to rat those guys out.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but still a pretty visceral death.
I mean, have some backbone, geez. But yeah, Bobbity is ruthless, and he pops that guy's head, and he... The thing with this situation is that you're right. Everyone's in a full-blown panic, and on top of showing everyone being turned into candy and eaten by Boo, he also had shown them images of Boo breathing out ki and disintegrating the entire town, while Bobbity mentioned that this is them dealing with their trash. And so the threats are real. Bobbity's not playing around.
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of cut over to Goten and Trunks waking up. They are in a room on the lookout, and they're basically like, where the heck are we? How did we get here? And they start kind of like snooping around. They, well, eventually find some food, but that'll be a little bit later as we kind of cut over then to the world of the Kais.
Yeah, so Gohan was transported to the world of the Kais, but he was transported in his pretty haggard, battered state, and then healed up after he got there by Kibito. And he wakes up properly confused. He doesn't know why he's there. And Kibito doesn't know why he's there. Like, why the hell did the Supreme Kai bring a dirty mortal to this sanctuary of the gods? Like, I love just the arrogance of Kibito.
I do like that kind of, I don't know if you would call it xenophobia. It's interesting to hear Kibito, who is effectively a god or a god-like being, just look down on mortals. And the Supreme Kai doesn't have that same sort of arrogance about him. He's basically like, I don't care what this guy is. Gohan's way stronger than either one of us, so we're going to get him even stronger so he can beat Boo.
Yeah, so this is where the Supreme Kai reveals that he's going to make Gohan this mighty strong warrior by making him wield the fated Z-Sword. I love the name.
The Z-Sword, yeah. The namesake for the show, not really, but Z-Fighter, Z-Sword, everything's got a Z in it because why not?
I always forget, is this the sword that Trunks uses?
No, it's not the same sword. Okay.
I've heard that brought up before, and I don't remember any connection between those two, but I figured I'd ask.
Yeah, there's only a few like important swords in the show, and yeah, those two are separate. But
all right, well, we get the hint of the Z sword before we flip back over to Goten and Trunks just gorging on some food they found, where Mr. Popo happens upon them eating, and they try escaping Mr. Popo. And when he grabs onto them and refuses to let them leave the room, they start fighting Mr. Popo, who keeps up with them surprisingly fucking well, which I think Abridged might be right about his secret, like, overwhelming power.
So I was shocked, I guess, maybe, that they kept this in here, because this is, I don't know if you want to call it filler. This is non-canon per the manga. I'll put it that way. I don't think that Mr. Popo is supposed to be this strong, and I think that Dragon Ball Z Abridged, the Team Four Star guys, specifically saw this scene. I think they've even talked about this, where they saw this scene where he keeps up with these two Super Saiyan boys with relative ease, and they took that and they just ran with it and cranked that up to 11.
I mean, it's funny because he's really not like fighting back. He's just kind of blocking blows or whatever, and he gets like bumped around a little bit. But, like, afterwards, when Goku walks in, it's like, hey, stop. Mr. Popo's like, oh, yeah, they are pretty strong, aren't they? Like, it's hilarious. I mean, the joke is spot on.
Yeah, 100%. You're kind of like, how strong is he? Honestly, I think that's even one of the jokes that is made in Team Four Stars Abridged series. But yeah, it's interesting that they decided to keep this in. I guess it's kind of pretty good connective tissue for getting Goten and Trunks back in contact with Goku here.
I mean, it's pretty fun. But we flip back over to Gohan, who's being led towards the location of the Z-Sword. And Kibito kind of looks back at him and mentions that somebody... you shouldn't be wearing the torn and disgusting outfit that Gohan's currently wearing on this sanctuary god planet. And so he uses his, I don't know, Kai powers to dress Gohan up in a outfit that's nearly identical to the ones that the Supreme Kai and Kobito are wearing. And I want to mention, I think this outfit change is so important and so necessary to the direction that I think Gohan should go, because I think that's the natural direction of his story arc.
Interesting. I was going to make a closed beam joke, but now you've caught my attention with that. What do you want to expound on that a little bit? Because I'm curious to know what you mean.
Gohan was really young. He did most of his training with Piccolo, who is a piece of the guardian of the earth, right? So he's kind of got that from a very young age, that relation to the Kais, I guess you could say. I always associate the guardian of the earth with like Kai energies of that same kind of ilk.
Sure.
When he got older, he went to Namek and then got the power up from, I would say, their version of the guardian of the planet, like a more like an older, wiser version of that, but for the Namekians, right? So Gohan goes down that route a little bit further. And then when he trains with his father, he trains up on the lookout, the seat of the guardian of the planet. So he's still in that same atmosphere, that same environment, even though Goku's training him, he's in that same guardian environment. And so from here, we go to the planet of the Kais. I think there's a string of kind of like defender of Earth or the universe training moments with Gohan that's naturally leading him down this path. And I really want them to lean into it more.
That is a really good point and something that I never really thought about. I'm curious if any of that was kind of like pre-planned at all. I have a feeling probably, well, at least some of the later parts probably were not, but I like that narrative through line for him.
I also think it works for Gohan quite a bit because Goku always sought out martial arts teachers to learn martial arts and be better at fighting. Gohan has a series of learnings where he wanted to defend people. And so it kind of fits into that Kai of version of nurturing and protecting life and protecting the universe. And so his natural inclination or his natural training route is leading him that direction. So I don't know, it just fits really well to me. And I feel like there's a narrative that could be spun there.
I mean, there's even a point to say about at the end of the original Dragon Ball where Goku was offered the seat of Guardian of the Earth by Kami, and Goku turned it down. He's like, nah, man, I just like to fight things. I like to have fun. I'm not interested in that. But I don't know that Gohan would necessarily take that role, but I could see him being like a, maybe an attendant or a secondary person to somebody like the Guardian. I like your connecting the dots there. That is really interesting.
Well, I don't know if being the Guardian of the Earth is the spot he would end up at. I don't know where his journey takes him, but I do feel like there's this string between all of his teachers that kind of leans towards that kind of Kai level of energy or that Kai level of fighting. So I don't know where that goes. I don't know the Toriyama universe well enough to be like, yeah, he's going to end up here. But I don't know. I think some seeds have been planted. I think the whole mystic Gohan side of him really leans into that Kai energy quite a bit. But I don't know what direction it goes from there. I just think there's something cool going on.
I mean, kind of the hilarious thing about that is that in Dragon Ball Super, most of the power-ups are connected to the gods. And the way that you're describing that, and now that I'm thinking about that too, it almost feels more appropriate that those would have been for Gohan's progression, that Gohan became a Super Saiyan god, or even Gohan trained to use Ultra Instinct, which is the technique of the angels. Like, that would have been really interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely there's some common thread that ties a lot of Gohan's teachings together. I don't know exactly what it is, but I don't know. I always feel like Gohan has had some sort of weird connection with the Kais and their energy and their training or their vibe. I don't know what you want to call it, but I would have liked to see them explore that. Or I could be making up stuff. I don't know. Like, if not, then continue on.
No, I like that a lot. I was glad to pause on that for a moment. Let's wrap up this episode since it is the last one we're covering here and we're at the tail end. So after Gohan is presented to the Z sword in the stone, we cut over to the lookout where Goten and Trunks have just received the news that Trunks's father is dead and Goten's brother is dead. And so they are just crying profusely, which, again, that's the response I would expect from a 7 and 8 year old child.
It's really interesting here, too, because Goku doesn't really allow this to continue. He raises his voice, uses that like adult parenting voice, and he tells them that they need to get it together and honor the deaths of their loved ones by training and becoming strong. And it's such, I mean, that's got to be such an eye-opening moment for these kids. It's kind of that, like, all right, we're not acting like little children anymore. We're going to start becoming adults.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. And I love this moment. I love this Goku so much. He is not going to coddle them. He doesn't even have any sort of relationship with Goten, his own son, because literally this day is the first day that Goku has met his son. So it's so interesting to see Goku be the stern, kind of harsh adult here, but it's for the good of the boys. It's for the good of the world. It's for the good of everybody, because Goku, again, very little time, got to get things done. And he's trying to get these kids to toughen up and be in a position where they can fight Majin Buu and save the world.
And my final note here, it kind of ties into my feelings for this chunk of episodes we just reviewed. After watching this one, I wrote down, if there's one thing the Buu saga should get credit for, it should be setting the table for the next generation of heroes. And just ignoring what actually happens in the future, just looking at it from right now and what they've written up to this point. I mean, Gohan's being set up to kind of fill his dad's shoes. Goten and Trunks are kind of growing up and becoming the fighters that maybe they're destined to be. There's a lot of moving pieces, and Vegeta's been removed from the scene, and Goku's about to leave. And now, like the door's wide open for somebody to step up and really become the next hero.
Man, I had almost that exact same thought, and I'm glad that you brought that up. So that is basically the tail end of that episode, as Goten and Trunks kind of, put on their big boy shorts, and you know they're ready to fight. We've got these two different narratives of Gohan getting the Z sword, and you know he's going to supposedly get stronger to fight Majin Buu. And Goten and Trunks are going to learn fusion so that they can stand up to Majin Buu. And what you described, Dayton, is exactly right, where our main characters, Goku and Vegeta, basically, are effectively out of the way for the next generation. I love everything about the way this is set up. And knowing what we know about the end of the Buu arc makes it such a letdown, because this narrative is fantastic. It is, you're like, oh, okay, I wonder who's gonna be the one to take down Majin Buu. Like, we've got two routes, and each of them could be very interesting. And we don't get a payoff for either one of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to delve too far into what they don't do, because I really want to enjoy how everything was set up to this point, right? And as far as us kind of ending our coverage, this is a great cliffhanger too, right? Like, stopping right here at this episode where you kind of, everything's at its darkest moment and we're given just a sliver of light, and that sliver of light are in characters that we wouldn't have expected to be the front runners. And so it's exciting. This is a very exciting point for the show, where we're going to see something new. We're going to see new fighters and new approaches to problems that that might have been solved differently with Goku and Vegeta. I mean, it's so fun. The way everything is set up right now, it is so fun. And I'm not going to knock it because of what they do later. But for right now, I do have to give them full points on buildup because I think they knocked it out of the park. You couldn't get me more hyped than it is right now.
Yes, I very much agree with you. I've seen this show. I know the narrative. I know the story. I couldn't believe how excited I got, even knowing the story, how excited I got being like, oh man, this is set up perfectly for Gohan to like come in and be the hero, or it's set up perfectly to have Goten and Trunks come in and, you know, save the day and get to do what they wanted to do and participate in, you know, beating a big bad guy. Like, what a beautiful way to set all of this up. It's super well done. Honestly,
and Vegeta's exit was beautifully written too, because there's no way he probably has too much pride to let anyone actually step in front of him. I think it makes sense that he's got to be the front runner until he's taken down. So if you want him to make room for the next hero or the next generation, I mean, I can't think of a better way to kind of, for lack of a better term, write him out of the show.
That's a great point. To add on to that, it is also a beautiful way to motivate Trunks in particular. I mean, not only Trunks, but having the idea that Gohan is dead, even though he's not, to help motivate Goten, that is brilliant. I mean, it's getting Vegeta, kind of the way you described it, getting Vegeta out of the way is serving multiple purposes here. It's such a beautifully woven narrative. And man, it honestly, for the Boo arc that we've covered so far, or starting from like the Orange Star High School arc or the World Martial Arts arc, whatever you want to call them, I have very few complaints in Kai as far as like the narrative. I think they could have tightened things up and cutting things out because, you know, they cut out
actually
a lot of filler.
So far, my biggest complaint is just, this is Kai. There's a lot of stuff you could have cut out of here. We spent way too much time in high school. I'm sorry.
I agree with you on that one. That is definitely true. Pacing wise, that was no good. But narrative wise, I'm impressed. I really, really like the Boo arc up to this point.
Just remember that feeling you have right now. Just latch onto that and don't look forward, because everything is great. There's no way it could get worse from here.
Yeah, definitely not.
But just to kind of punctuate your note on Trunks, consider what Trunks' life has been up to this point. He's like more powerful than anyone around his age. He thinks his dad is the strongest person, actually probably rightfully so. His dad is the strongest person on the planet. He has unlimited money. There's no need for him to grow up. And then suddenly his dad's gone and he's forced into like the limelight and has to be responsible and an adult. Like what a shock to your system to go from kind of being a spoiled brat to having to put the entire planet on your shoulders alone.
Absolutely.
Or without your dad. I guess he's going to share it with Goten, but still, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's someone else there to help share the load, right? Which is good, because both of them are, they're 7 and 8 year old boys. Like, that's a lot to put on somebody's shoulders. But at the same time, again, drawing that parallel to, let's say, Gohan, for instance. Gohan was 11 years old when Goku threw him to the wolves to fight Cell in order to save the planet. Like, they're not that far off in age.
Yeah, I guess that. Well, how old was Gohan when they went to Namek?
Like 5, maybe 6.
So, I mean, yeah, they're in that perfect age range to really get some great trauma that will carry with you the rest of your life.
I will continue to say I wish that they would dive into the trauma like Gohan, for instance, should have.
Yeah, it's got to be immense. But yeah, I mean, that's more or less my opinion of this chunk of episodes, the Majin Buu arc, the first part of it is the buildup is top notch. I really don't have too many complaints. The music was actually pretty good this chunk of episodes. The dialogue, I still think the dialogue was really good. I do agree with you that I think the original may have done some things a little bit better, but I don't think anything on here was really bad or distracting.
I agree with you. Yeah, there are, honestly, my complaints about this chunk of episodes are just being nitpicky a little bit. Maybe even a little bit of nostalgia for the old Funimation dub. Like, there are a couple moments where I'm like, oh man, I really miss the old music for that. Like the Bell's Hells track, which is basically Vegeta's theme. I miss getting that. But the music that they replaced it, or that they used for those scenes, like Vegeta's scenes, most of those were really well done. And then you had the really good Boo track that I liked a lot. The dialogue, again, is like just little pieces that I'm like, I liked it just a little bit more in the original. But the delivery is so much better in Kai than it was in the original.
And there are just the voice acting in general, you can tell it's gotten really good. When you listen back to the original Funimation run, you can tell there's a little bit of stiffness, a little bit of roboticness, especially with the Supreme Kai's voice in the original. It is very kind of stiff delivery, and it's gotten better, a lot better in Kai.
I was even shocked at, I think it was either Vegeta or Piccolo, or maybe even both, but I was even shocked at the difference in delivery for them. Like, Christopher Sabat has gotten much, much better, and even his voices sound just way more confident.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I mean, it's just sometimes just the way something's conveyed or the way it's said or voice acted can give me more emotion than maybe the actual words itself. So I give it full points.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm impressed with this set. I don't have a whole lot more to say about it. We've kind of touched on most of the things. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Dayton?
No, the hype is freaking real, baby. I hope this thing doesn't completely disappoint me by the end.
I wonder.
Just ride the high, baby. Just ride it.
Yeah, that's right. But that's going to be it for this episode of Instant Transmission, where we discuss everything Dragon Ball. This has been your host, Todd.
And Dayton.
Don't forget, we are on Patreon and Twitter.
Thank you so much for remembering that.
I almost forgot that I had to read that part. If you want to help us make better content, you can find us at patreon.com/ITDB podcast. That stands for Instant Transmission Dragon Ball Podcast, because I know it's not confusing at all. And you can find us over on Twitter at x.com/ITDB podcast.
Seriously. Go over there. Yell at us. Engage with us. Come on. Wake us up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, we're good at engaging. I'm also never going to stop calling it Twitter because X is stupid. Anyway.
That's a slippery slope if you type that in wrong.
Be sure to join us next time.
I'm really messing up your outro. All right. It's all you. You have the floor.
All right, we're professionals. Be sure to join us next time.
So haggard.
As we watch King Arthur, Gohan, try to pull the sword from the stone in part 2 of the Majin Buu arc. Majin Buu is devouring people by the thousands, but our Z fighters have 2 separate plans in motion for dealing with the pink monster and his wizard master. Can Goten and Trunks learn the fusion dance in time to make a difference? Will Gohan be able to use the Z sword against Majin Buu? Does Dragon Ball really need 2 pervy old men? Find out a next time. And to all our fellow Dragon Ball fans, stay safe out there and remember to keep rocking the dragon.
I got nothing. That was just awful.
Don't go to xxx.com, kids.
Yeah, don't. Too many X's. No.